Relationship with culprit, fellow villager. Number of people involved, 1. Manner of crime, hacked to death, cooked and eaten. Reason, livelihood issues. Date, March 1960. Location, Hongtai Commune, Xiaogu Gate. Name of culprit, Zhu Shuangzi. Status, poor farmer. Number of people involved, 2. Name of victim, void. Relationship with culprit, husband and elder son. Number of people involved, 2. Manner of crime, corpses exhumed and eaten. Reason, livelihood issues. Most of the culprits on the list practiced necrophagy, either eating those who had passed away or exhuming and eating cadavers after burial. The 76 victims fell into 3 categories. Killed and eaten, 12, eaten after death, 16, and exhumed and eaten, 48. Among those who were murdered, roughly half were fellow villagers and half were strangers passing through. Only one murder took place inside the family. Lin Xia was no exception. When a team of inspectors was sent to review the Xiaotu commune in Shizu County, Sichuan, in early 1961, they were startled by the extent of cannibalism. Rather than take note of a few cases to signal the practice, as was usual, they made the effort to investigate one brigade in depth with the help of the local Public Security Bureau. The list they compiled provided the details of 16 victims and 18 perpetrators. Necrophagy had apparently started after Luo Wenxiu, a 70-year-old woman, unearthed the bodies of 2 small children and cooked them for herself. In some cases, only parts of a body were eaten. Ma Zemin's heart, for instance, was scooped out. Much of this may have been related to the fact that most of these corpses were already in an advanced state of putrefaction. Some people covered the meat in hot peppers. In Russian, there is a distinction between lyudodstvo, literally people-eating, and trupodstvo, or corpse-eating. It is a very useful distinction, one which introduces much-needed nuance into a topic stigmatized not only by the party, but also by its enemies, keen to portray cannibalism as a metaphor for the very system itself. And as the villagers themselves told and retold stories about body snatchers, cannibals with red eyes or families swapping their children between them before eating them, the whole business was sensationalized to the point where it was placed under a cloud of skepticism. But as the cases of Lin Xia and Xiaotu show, very few people were actually cannibals who killed to eat. Most were scavengers, extending their survival techniques to the eating of cadavers. How they reached their decision to eat human flesh must surely have varied from one person to the next. But as desperate survivors, all of them would have witnessed many of the horrors being inflicted on living human beings, from body parts being chopped off to people being buried alive. Surely, in the midst of state-sponsored violence, necrophagy was neither the most common nor the most widespread way of degrading a human being. Chapter 37. The Final Tally. How many died? There will never be a satisfactory answer to that question, if only because in the midst of the Great Famine, so few reliable statistics were kept. So far, every noteworthy estimate has been based on the official figures on population size and on birth and death rates for 1950 to 1982, published for the first time in the 1984 Statistical Yearbook by the National Statistical Bureau, or on the official figures of the 1953, 1964, and 1982 censuses. Immediately following the publication of the Statistical Yearbook, Basil Ashton used the official evidence to propose a figure of 30 million premature deaths during the 1958 to 1962 period, when the overall population stood at roughly 650 million. Judith Bannister, a professional demographer, also looked at the population statistics and concluded that an estimated 30 million excess deaths appeared during 1958 to 1961. Since the data present a whole range of problems, from lack of internal consistency to the under-registration of births and deaths and the exclusion of the armed forces, different authors have tinkered with this or that variable either to lower or to heighten the number. Peng Si-chi, an expert in population studies, proposed an estimate of 23 million in 1987, while Jung Chang, in her book on Mao, reached a figure of 38 million. More recently, retired journalist Yang Jisheng suggested a figure of about 36 million, also based on published statistics. New evidence was produced in 2005 when Cao Shuzi, an historical demographer from Shanghai, systematically worked his way through more than 1,000 gazetteers, official local histories published after 1979 by county or city party committees. While acknowledging that this widely diverse set of data, too, ultimately rests on figures made public by the party, it introduced a much more fine-tuned analysis of regional differences. Cao's estimate was 32.5 million premature deaths. How reliable are official numbers? In the Soviet Union, the Central Office of Statistics produced two sets of demographic statistics, one for internal use and one for publication. But as we have already seen in the case of grain procurements, the party archives in China have widely different set of statistics at every level, from the commune, the county, and the province, up to the centre. Some were compiled at the height of the collectivization craze and were intended to convey political zeal. Others were assembled by investigation teams sent to the countryside to oversee the removal of abusive party officials. In other words, debates about whether the released figures are doctored or not miss a very basic point. There is no need for anybody to falsify figures. It is merely a matter of compiling a set of statistics which appears to be the least politically damaging. Or, to put it slightly differently, the fact that public data in a one-party state are not falsified does not necessarily make them reliable. At least three different sets of unpublished data exist in the archives, namely those compiled by the Provincial Public Security Bureau, those from the local party committee, and those from the local statistical bureau. Nobody has ever gained access to all three sets, but after 1979, as the new leadership wanted to find out more about the Maoist era, a team of 200 was instructed by Zhao Ziyang to go around every province to examine internal party documents. The erstwhile secretary of Guangdong, who had pioneered an anti-hiding campaign in 1959, was now premier, and he asked the team to draw a picture of rural China. The team's report was never published, but one of its members, a senior party official called Chen Yizi, fled to America in the wake of the Tiananmen massacre in 1989. In exile, he claimed that the team had arrived at a death toll of 43 to 46 million people for the famine. Only one person who has investigated the famine has taken Chen Yizi's claim seriously, namely Jasper Becker, who interviewed him for his book Hungry Ghosts, published in 1996. The archival evidence presented for the first time below vindicates Chen Yizi's findings, and conservatively puts the number of premature deaths at a minimum of 45 million for the Great Famine of 1958 to 1962. Even Chen Yizi and his team would have encountered difficulties in carrying out their research. Archives in a one-party state are not public. They belong to the party and are controlled by the party. Except for those under the remit of the public security bureaus, most of them are located in a building inside the party headquarters. Even a high-powered delegation from Beijing could have been fobbed off or deliberately misled by experienced archivists, all the more so since a catalogue would not have existed for every collection. But most of all, some sets were simply missing. In Hubei, for instance, The file from the party committee, which should have contained the figures for all excess deaths during the famine, is incomplete. Inside the brown folder is a handwritten note appended by an archivist dated June 1979, which regrets that the item is missing. As to the Public Security Bureau, in Hubei it offered no more than a vague estimate, speculating that the death rate in 1961 was 2 to 3 times lower than the preceding year. The report wonders about the total death toll, but provides no answers. In any event, all three organizations, the Provincial Public Security, the Provincial Party Committee, and the Provincial Statistical Bureau, would have had to rely on units lower down the party hierarchy to compile their reports, and obstruction from below was rife. In Gansu province, the Provincial Party Committee sent out a request for estimates in 1962 for excess deaths during the famine. The project foundered, as only a handful of counties ever replied. But even when numbers were sent in by county authorities, there were problems. First among them was the distinction between normal and abnormal deaths. Demographers distinguish between natural and unnatural deaths to tease out a rough estimate of how many people died prematurely as a consequence of famine. But in China, the distinction was political. Industrial accidents, suicides, fatal epidemics, or deaths from starvation were all a matter of great concern to the authorities. They stood as indices of social and political health, and they were diligently monitored by the party's regulators. Even a single case of suicide could signal that something was amiss, warranting a political investigation from above. In the middle of mass death in Fuyang, one of the sites of horror in Anhui, where up to 70% of some villages were wiped out, the region reported 10,890 deaths for the first quarter of 1961, of which a mere 524 were described as abnormal, including 103 deaths due to emaciation and edema. In Zhongxian, Sichuan, the county head Zhu Wensheng simply dictated that in the official statistics, two rules had to be followed. Birth rates had to exceed death rates, and the death rate could not be higher than 2%. In Fuling, also in Sichuan, two sets of statistics were kept. For 1960, local cadres managed to count a total population of 594,324 people, but reported 697,590, a difference of more than 100,000. Even when cadres were willing to confront the harsh reality of famine, who could have kept track of an avalanche of death? In Xiangjin, in Xiangbei counties in Sichuan, up to 250 people died each day in December 1960. The last thing on the minds of local officials would have been to do the rounds each day to produce a neat list of mortality figures, even if they were specifically asked by their superiors to do so. When local cadres or police officers did try to report the full extent of death, they were generally labelled rightists. Chao Xian, head of the Public Security Bureau in Wenxiang County, Sichuan, systematically compiled statistics for 1959 and discovered that 27,000 people, or 16%, were missing compared to the previous year. He was taken to task by his superior at the provincial level, but refused to modify his findings, which led directly to his political demise. To make matters even more complicated, obfuscation went all the way to the top. Provincial boss Liu Siho, like so many others, dutifully reported 4,700 abnormal deaths to Chairman Mao for all of Hebei in 1960, even though his own team of inspectors had discovered that in one county alone, some 18,000 had died of hunger since 1958. The irony is that he chastised county leaders for covering up the extent of the famine, all the while keeping the incriminating figures from his own superiors in Beijing. At every level, party officials badgered their subordinates for the truth, but were deceitful with their own superiors, contributing to a maze of self-deception. To say that knowledge is power is a truism, and one that does not go very far in explaining why the more absolute power was, the less truth it managed to produce. But death on such a scale could hardly be hidden all the time. Sometimes local leaders took a chance, sending in hard-hitting reports further up the hierarchy, occasionally directly to Zhou Enlai or Mao Zedong himself. Extraordinarily detailed reports compiled by the investigation teams that fanned out over the countryside after October 1960 led to the removal of a whole series of leaders who had presided over mass death. And sometimes retrospective investigations were carried out in the years following the famine as the party tried to make sense of what had happened. The result is not so much a neatly arranged set of statistics revealing some absolute truth and a few telling numbers, but rather a mass of uneven and at times messy documentation compiled in different ways, at different times, for different reasons, by different entities, with different degrees of reliability. So assigning a team of 200 people to sift through the evidence would have been a good idea. The very best of these documents were compiled by a powerful security bureau and covered an entire province. As we have seen, this did not happen in Hubei, but it did in Sichuan, by far the most devastated province in all of China. The head of the Provincial Security Bureau authorized an investigation into the statistics from 1954 to 1961. The results undermined many of the reported totals, which underestimated the death toll by several percent in 1960 alone. The corrected death rate for 1954 to 1957 was an average of 1%. This increased to 2.5% in 1958, to 4.7% in 1959, to 5.4% in 1960, and to 2.9% in 1961. It added up to 10.6 million deaths from 1958 to 1961, of which 7.9 million were above 1% and can thus be considered excess deaths. But in Sichuan, unlike the rest of the country, famine did not vanish in 1962. There are countless reports about continuing starvation from a range of counties until the end of 1962. The Public Security Bureau compiled figures which determined that 1.5% died that year, meaning that another 300,000 perished prematurely, bringing the total to 8.2 million. Yet even this figure is no doubt too low by at least 10 or 20%, if only because in Sichuan, unlike in other provinces such as Gansu, the party boss Li Jingzhuan remained firmly in power despite his responsibility for the deaths of many millions of people. Even in 1962, few county leaders in Sichuan would have been prepared to report the full extent of the disaster. No other similar documents are available, so far. But we do have data collected by regional statistical bureaus. In the case of Yunnan, where the famine started in 1958, the death rate recorded for the year was 2.2%, double the national average for 1957. This alone would have amounted to 430,000 excess deaths, when most historians using official statistics mention only about 800,000 deaths for the entire 1958 to 1961 period. The best available evidence comes from carefully compiled reports at the village, commune and county level. Since the work of the historical demographer Cao Shuzi, who used published party gazetteers to estimate death rates on a county basis, is in agreement with other population specialists who propose a death roll of roughly 32 million, it provides a very helpful baseline. Common sense indicates that local party committees had every incentive to underestimate published death rates, and in that sense, Cao Shuzi's estimate should be considered conservative. The purpose of what follows is to test his figures and provide a rough idea of how they should be adjusted. Not only is a focus on smaller entities such as counties much more accurate than larger aggregations at the national level, but it also allows us to eliminate so many of the variables that have confused demographers working with censuses, from internal migration to the size of the army between 1958 and 1962. However, an average death rate is required in order to calculate extra death figures. What would be reasonable? Here is what Liu Shaoqi, the head of state, thought in 1961 when discussing the famine in his hometown of Huaminglu, where hundreds died every month. What are normal deaths? What are abnormal deaths? If you hit a man once and he dies of his injuries, or if somebody jumps into a river, it qualifies as an abnormal death. You can take the figures of the last 2 years to calculate a normal death rate. A normal death rate is below 1%, in general 0.8%. A normal birth rate is 2%. Any deaths above 0.8% are abnormal. To err on the safe side, given the wide variations across the country, 1% should be taken as a normal death rate. In the case of Hebei, we have some very detailed reports for 1960, compiled after provincial boss Liu Ziho gave the green light by asking for investigations into abnormal deaths down to the level of the household. Hu Kaiming, an outspoken party official in charge of Changjiakou, who later incurred the wrath of Mao Zedong for proposing greater freedom for farmers to determine their own prices, reported that 1.9% of the population had died in 1960, amounting to 59,000 people. In Weixian County, adjacent to Changjiakou, the death rate was 3.4% in 1960, as 18,000 people died. That amounted to some 40,000 excessive deaths in 1 year. Using official documentation, Cao Shuzi's figure for excessive deaths in Changjiakou and Weixian is 15,000 for the entire 3 years of famine. In Tianjin and the surrounding countryside, hardly the most deprived part of the country, 30,000 people died within 3 months at the end of 1960. A normal rate of attrition would have claimed less than half of these lives. The figure provided by Cao Shuzi, again based on official rather than archival sources, is 30,000 excess deaths for 3 years. Another example comes from Shijiazhuang, the seat of a region covering some 15 counties. By reading the official data critically, Cao arrives at 15,000 deaths for the entire region over 3 years. But in the city of Shijiazhuang alone, close to 4,000 people died in a mere 10 days in January 1961, when counting the victims of starvation was no longer politically taboo. Tianjin, Changjiakou, and Shijiazhuang were cities nominally isolated from starvation in the countryside. A very different example comes from Gansu, where the demotion of Zhang Zhongliang in November 1960 was followed by several months of local investigations, bringing to light the extent of the famine. In Longxi County, 16,000 people died in 1959, or 7.5%, followed by 23,000 in 1960, or 11% of the population. So in those 2 years alone, the excess deaths stood at 35,000. But for 3 years of famine, Cao Shuzi reaches 24,000 deaths. Party archives give 32,000 deaths for Xinying County, about 7% each year in 1959 and 1960. This contrasts with a figure of 19,000 excess deaths for a period of 3 years arrived at by Cao Shuzi. In Changye, out of a population of roughly 280,000, some 5,000 people died in November, followed by 6,000 in December 1960. Even if we double the normal rate of attrition to 2%, that would still represent over 10,000 excess deaths in less than a quarter of a year. Cao Shuzi arrives at 17,000 excess deaths, not for one county in 2 months, but for 4 counties over a period of 3 years. In the spring of 1960, some 20,000 people died in Wuwei County alone. Cao Shuzi suggests 50,000 premature deaths for a region comprising 4 counties over a period of 3 years. In Guizhou, the Provincial Party Committee reckoned by 1961 that some 10% of the workforce were missing when compared with 1957, meaning 500,000 workers, not counting children and the elderly. Not all of these had died, of course, as many had migrated out of the province, but the death rates were high throughout Guizhou, in particular in regions such as Qishui and Meitan. In Qishui, some 22,000 people died in half a year, or 10% of the population. Cao Shuzi, using the official record of the county, proposes 46,000 over a period of 3 years, which seems reasonable enough. But in the case of Meitan, 45,000 people died in half a year. Cao Shuzi suggests 105,000 for 4 counties over a period of 3 years, which must be too low. Even more interesting is that in his extremely conscientious compilation of the official data for all counties, some places are missing. Yanhe, part of the Tongren region, is not mentioned, although some 40,000 to 50,000 people died of hunger in that county alone. In Shandong, the discrepancies are of a similar magnitude, even if few of the relevant archives can be accessed by historians. In Pingyuan County, to take an example from the northwestern part of the province, a high-ranking investigation noted that out of a population of 452,000 in 1957, over 46,000 people had died by 1961. Despite 24,000 births, the total population dropped to 371,000 as tens of thousands took to the roads to escape from famine, many to die elsewhere, their deaths being excluded from these figures. Cao Shuzi's examination of the official annals proposes 19,000 premature deaths for Pingyuan County. Even if we take into account a normal death rate of 1% per year over a period of 4 years, the total of excess deaths reported at the time would be equivalent to 28,000, or 50% higher. A similar observation can be made about Sihe, which lost a fifth of its population, or 100,000, between 1957 and 1961. If we deduct a normal death rate of 1% for 4 years and accept that roughly half of the vanished probably migrated to other areas, the document is not clear on this issue, we are still left with a figure comparable to Pingyuan, or roughly 30,000, although Cao Shuzi ventures no more than 19,000, or a third less. For the entire Laichu region, consisting of Qingdao and 13 counties, Cao Shuzi's estimate is 164,000 premature deaths over 4 years. But the archives show that in Jimo County alone, according to incomplete statistics, some 47,000 people died, excluding 51,000 farmers who took to the roads, over a period of 2 years. Even if we deduct 15,000 normal deaths for a population of approximately 750,000 people, it still leaves the county with 32,000 premature deaths, far above Cao Shuzi's estimate. In some cases, the archival data and the published material are in line. In Xingxing County, Guangdong, 1.5% of the population died in 1959, followed by 2.88% in 1960. This would have amounted to roughly 5,000 deaths, while Cao Shuzi arrives at a total of 8,000 deaths for 3 years. For the much larger region of Tianmen, also in Guangdong, encompassing several counties, the death rate given to the Provincial Party Committee was 2% in 1960, or 120,000 deaths, half of which would count as premature. This is difficult to compare with Cao's reconstruction of the official data, as the administrative borders of the